Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Have you been a victim of computer hacking? Hello, listeners. Welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. This is Bill Quinn. Today is October 31st, and we are on day two of our business article, Heroes in the Cyber Battle. You can find it on pages 42 and 43 in your Advanced magazine. And it's interesting. We've been digging into some of the background information here. What is going on as far as hackers getting into personal accounts, corporate accounts, and then also the people who are trying to prevent this from happening, especially at companies. So it's a battle that's being waged. You may not be aware of it. We spend our days maybe checking email, skimming through Facebook, doing all sorts of things on the internet, and we may not even realize there is a war being waged in cyberspace, and it is constant. It's global and it's constant, and there are hackers everywhere. They can be in California or Bulgaria or Russia or Peru. So there are hackers everywhere. They have access. Doesn't matter where they are, because they can be anywhere and access your account or corporate accounts. So there are no more boundaries anymore in cyberspace. My two panelists from yesterday are back, and they are David Mao and Rebecca Krushnitsky. Hello, panelists.
Hello, everybody.
Great to have you back here for day two of this article. Now, we left off yesterday. The last part of our reading yesterday talked about some salaries, pay for people that are helping to prevent hacking, the guys in the white hats, and some of the pay listed there said $120,000 to $130,000 a year, and that's how we finished yesterday. I was talking with David about this, asking him if that was correct, and there is a price to pay. That's where we left off yesterday, because while the salary is attractive, there's a cost, right?
Yes, there's a big cost. There's a lot of mental stress. One little mistake can cost the company millions, maybe even your clients millions.
Right.
There's a lot of the time constraint. You have to finish within, like there's a loophole coming out. You have to finish it within 4 to 8 hours.
Right.
To patch the hole.
Mm-hmm.
There's many, many factors constitute the price.
Now, a couple things I would think of as far as like the schedule. You said 24/7. You have to be available 24/7, right?
Yes.
A lot of these guys are on call.
They're on call. I mean, they're got to be a gadget on them that's connected to the internet.
Constantly. Okay, you are constantly connected to the internet, and you must constantly be available because there could be a problem. You could be in the middle of sleeping, right?
Yes.
At 3 a.m. and you get a call, we got a problem.
Yes, and they have to have a rapid response to immediately realize what is going on.
Right.
And then make a judgment within the next hour to finish it.
Okay. All right. So that's one thing. And then you could get called at 3 a.m., and this happens frequently, and then you could have to then work on that problem for the next 16 hours?
Less than that.
Okay.
Yes. Most of the security nowadays, most of the security firms expect a result within 8 hours.
All right. And then also as far as there's intellectual stress and also some emotional stress. And without getting into details, you had mentioned that this takes a toll on people emotionally.
Yes. You have people working in the public sector, like yesterday we talked about CSI, things like that. You know, those are the fancy part where you see the case solved within an hour.
Right.
There are cases the result comes back in 4 months or so, and then you realize, oh, this case got dismissed or something like went bad because you did not provide enough evidence.
Right.
And then the bad guy walks away or the good guy locks up.
Right, right. And it can get very, very serious, the cases that they are involved in. It's involving people maybe going to prison and or, you know, companies having to pay huge fines,
yes.
settlements, millions and millions of dollars.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So there, while the pay looks attractive, be aware that there's a reason the pay is at it is, and that there's a lot more pressure on it than people might realize. So, okay. Also, Rebecca, let me get a thought from you from yesterday.
Yeah, going back to yesterday, I think an important point we covered was the difference between white hats and black hats. And the black hats being the hackers who go into a company or government's website to steal information, and the white hats, as you can see them as the good guys,
mm-hmm.
Who are protecting a company's security system.
Mm-hmm.
And these white hats are people like Davidov and the other guy.
Adam Cicchetti. These are the good guys.
Yeah.
So they are wearing the white hats.
The white hats.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, before we get into our reading for today, let's cover that little sidebar we have at the bottom of page 42, the bottom of the right column. We didn't talk about it yesterday. Global cyber crimes. And this gives a little background information on the frequency. Every second in various parts of the world, there are 18 cybercrime victims. Every second. Some 1.6 million a day, according to a 2012 Norton by Symantec study. Recently, the Wenatchee World newspaper reported that a Washington hospital said hackers stole more than $1 million from the hospital's electronic bank account. So this is a very typical example. This is in the state of Washington. David had spent many, many years in Seattle, so you're familiar with this area. And the Chelan County, Washington treasurer did say that it had been able to retrieve about $133,000 by notifying recipient bank accounts, mostly in the Midwest and East Coast. So somebody somewhere, the hospital's in Washington, right?
Yes.
But somebody elsewhere got in.
Yeah, they got in. They went through the account and probably withdraw in many different fake accounts or bogus
right.
accounts to get the money back into their actual accounts.
Right. So this is actually a great example. Here's a hospital in the state of Washington on the west coast of America. Who knows where this hacker was?
Nobody knows, but it could be in France.
Could be in France. They're depositing money and accounts throughout the United States. So that's a great example of there are no boundaries with this. So it's something that people need to be vigilant and companies need to be vigilant on this because it is a constant threat. So let's turn to page 43 and get into our reading for today. We'll split it up into three sections. The first one will be down to line 11 on the left column.
At Deja Vu Security, Cicchetti said, work that they've done includes posing as new employees at a financial institution and getting the standard access to computers. Firms routinely give computer administrative privileges to only a handful of individuals. But, Cicchetti said, within a couple of weeks, we had basically control of the entire organization and could access pretty much anything we wanted. Deja Vu put together a very large report on how to fix things, he said.
Okay, the second half of yesterday, we met Adam Cicchetti, who is started a firm, Deja Vu Security, and he talks about some of the work that they've done, and it's fascinating, this first example, right, Rebecca?
Yeah, here... Deja Vu, what Deja Vu did was they basically posed or they pretended they were new employees at a financial institution. And they actually went into the bank or financial institution's servers and got access to all the information in that financial institution.
Now, in this instance, I think what happened is the bank actually contracted them. I think maybe the bank's, the IT department contracted
IT department probably contracted Deja Vu Security to be a test team, task force, and came in posing as a regular employee and find out how much harder for them or how hard it is to get the administration right.
Okay. So this is almost like you had said the word espionage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
They're like being a spy.
They are.
I mean, it's really kind of funny. They were posing as, hey, I'm applying to work here at this bank. Go through the whole process of interviewing and getting hired. And so this is all to see, okay, how vulnerable is our system? And we see in line four then as far as what typically happens with firms.
Yes, they give out computer rights based on your roles.
Yeah.
If you're regular staff, you get only like probably re-only
right.
Access. Now, if you're managers, you probably get more than that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with that is sometimes there's always a loophole, a backdoor that the IT department has to create in case something maybe went bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to go through the back door. Now,
right.
This company is there to find out where is your back door hides.
Right.
How easy is it for a regular staff to penetrate?
Yeah. A back door might be, for instance, recently, I've had this happen a couple of times and you know about it. I forget my password.
Yes.
And a back door is, well, I got to call you up and say, David, I forgot my password. And so then you can actually create a new password for me.
Yes.
That's the back door.
That is not the back door. That's actually a regular process.
Yeah.
The back door is that you called and I didn't, identify you as Bill.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like, okay, maybe you're a friend of another IT admin.
Right.
And says, hey, Joe didn't come to work today. I can fit in Joe. And then he says, pretended to be Joe and says, I lost my password.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, we see the term administrative privileges there in five, line five. And that's normally a higher level where normally it's just managers, people at a higher level. Only they have access to these administrative privileges. It gives them the ability to change things, see key information. So we're talking about only a few people having access to administrative privileges. But in line seven.
But here, Deja Vu was able to get in, and within a couple of weeks, they could control basically the entire company and access whatever they wanted.
Within a couple of weeks, they had access to these administrative privileges. They really weren't supposed to have it, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
But basically what they're doing is they're helping the bank or financial institution see that these are holes that you have to plug up. These are vulnerabilities you have in your system that if it was a black hat coming in, the black hat could come in and do some serious damage and steal your information.
Okay, so this bank's IT department contracted out to them, said, hey, find this out. They came in a very short period of time, they were able to get access and control of the system. Not good. But the good thing is Deja Vu did put together a very large report for this bank on how to fix things. So I guess in a way they did accomplish their mission. They helped them, right?
Yes, they have.
Okay, they identified areas they needed to change. Okay, let's have our second reading. It will be that section, An Early Passion, down to line 25.
An Early Passion. Hackers such as Davidoff and Cecchetti have certain similarities. For one thing, they started tinkering with computers when they were kids, and that passion never stopped. Cecchetti helped start a computer club in high school and said, I was plenty nerdy. As a teen in the 1990s, he was programming video games and went on to creating simple websites before they had become ubiquitous. Cecchetti earned a master's from Carnegie Mellon University in electrical and computer engineering, and ended up in Seattle in 2005 working for Amazon to keep black hats from breaking in.
Okay, an early passion. So if you get into this, you have to really, really want to do this. You have to really just thirst for this kind of stuff. And so that's these guys, hackers such as Mikhail Davidov and Adam Cecchetti. And they are very similar, right, Rebecca?
Yeah, basically how they're similar is they started playing around or trying to fix, tinker with computers since they were very young, since they were little kids.
Okay. So we had the term yesterday, whiz kids. I guess they would be considered whiz kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And now when we're tinkering with something, what does that mean?
Well, to tinker is to make small changes to make something better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these changes are usually quite small, but, you know, like you'll play around with it to make it even better than it is right now.
All right. Tinkering, or a synonym would be tweaking with things. Now we get a little bit of background information here on Adam Cecchetti in line 16. What did he first start out?
Well, he started a computer club in high school, and he said he was pretty nerdy, which I believe he was.
Okay. All right.
And then as a team, he also programmed video games and went on creating simple websites, probably from scratch, which was rare back in the 90s.
Yes, it was very rare back in the 90s. And this was before they had become what?
They had become ubiquitous. And what ubiquitous really means, it's everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, you might say, this song is ubiquitous. Like, you hear everywhere you go, at every department store, at convenience store, everywhere you go in town.
Okay. All right. Now, Adam Cecchetti earned a master's degree from Carnegie Mellon University, which happens to be in my hometown of Pittsburgh, in electrical and computer engineering. And then he ended up in Seattle in 2005. That's interesting. Why would he go there?
Well, that's where all the software companies are. It's not the actual Silicon Valley, but it's where Microsoft, Amazon, the big giants are.
Big presence out there, of course. Microsoft, Amazon, Google has a big presence there. Many firms. So, in fact, he did start working for Amazon. We see, it looks like, back in 2005. And so even back then, he was helping to keep the black hats, the bad guys, from breaking in while he was there at Amazon. That would be very important at Amazon, right?
Yes. Amazon, as a retail giant in the state, they probably get attacked not daily but secondly.
Yeah.
Meaning probably millions.
Constantly. Amazon is getting attacked constantly.
Yes.
We have to assume that because of all the money, the transactions that take place, the customer data, all of that information. How many people would they have, like, on their security team?
I don't know, but I would give a rough guess, at least 15 to 20.
Yeah.
Globally.
Okay. All right. Because I do wonder about large firms like Amazon or Facebook or Microsoft, and I think they're getting attacked in many different ways. And one thing is, I think that just even their website, people are attacking and try to mess with their website, right?
Yes. Now, Amazon do have a special website design that I know of, and they are actually certified and from many security standards.
Mm-hmm.
So even government has used their web services.
Yeah.
So they learned the ropes, and they made that into a profit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, so they've become so good at security that it actually is a form of revenue for them.
Yes.
Okay. Learned the ropes. He used the term learned the ropes, Rebecca. It's not in our text, but it's a really good term for our listeners to know. What does that mean, learned the ropes?
Well, to learn the ropes is to basically get the hang of something or to learn something you've never learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And actually, it's a term that comes from boxing. That's where boxers, they are in a ring where there are ropes around the ring. And part of being a good boxer is knowing how to move around the ring. And so as a boxer, you must learn the ropes, learn how to use the ropes to your advantage. Okay, let's have our last reading for today.
Davidov is the son of Russian immigrants. His father worked at a tech firm in Moscow and got a visa to come to the U.S. in 1995, moving the family to Washington. But even in the old country, when he was five, Davidoff said, he was using a computer his father brought home, playing little DOS games, the early operating system. By his teen years, Davidoff was hacking into video games so he could beat them. It is the ability to look at programs over, under, sideways, and down that makes Davidoff so valuable. For both Davidoff and Cecchetti, it was a conscious and simple decision to become a white hat. Said Cecchetti, "I'm not in this business to harm people or to take grandma's savings or deface somebody's website."
Bill Quinn here with Rebecca Krusneski and David Mao. We're wrapping up our business article, Heroes in the Cyber Battle, talking about white hats and black hats and what's going on as far as hacking and these people who are trying to get into company websites and gather information or mess things up, and then also the people that are working to prevent this from happening. So we've met two of the guys that are wearing white hats trying to prevent this, Adam Cecchetti and also Mikhail Davidoff. Now, we just learned some background information on Adam Cecchetti, and we're going to learn a little bit more about Mikhail Davidoff in this reading.
Well, Davidoff is basically a Russian immigrant's kid. Mm-hmm. His parents came from Russia, and his father actually worked in a tech firm.
Okay.
And then he moved his family to the U.S.
Okay.
And that's where Davidoff grew up, in the U.S.
Okay. All right. So he's 26 years old now. So he actually spent most of his life in America. But we go back in the next paragraph, line 30, even in the old country, back in Russia, the old country we refer to our country of origin. It's like, well, back in the old country where we all came from. Even when he was an early child, what did he do?
Well, he was using a computer that his father brought home, mm-hmm. you know, playing a little DOS game, which is really rare, again, for people of his age.
At age five.
Yes.
Right, to be playing on this computer. Now we see playing little DOS games. Our generation today may not know the term DOS.
DOS? Yes, I have about four years of experience in DOS at school.
Yep.
You have to write bash file. I mean, it's a very...
What does the acronym mean? DOS. D-O-S.
Something operating
disk
system.
Operating system.
Disk operating system,
yeah.
Or
by
doctor
Microsoft.
Or something.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, right?
Actually, it's one of the most weird operating system, I would say, because it's not like the Linux. It can go with the multifunctional.
Yeah.
It's a single thing. And
right.
it dominated the market for 5-6 years. That's weird.
Essentially, it is what made Microsoft.
Yes.
Yeah, it is what made Microsoft.
Linux was much, much better back at the same time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, time has its course.
Yeah, all right. So that's, I just want to explain DOS, what he's talking about there. What does he mean, DOS? That's the operating system, the early operating system for PCs and laptops. So now, Davidoff, though, during his teen years, he got into hacking into video games so he could beat them. He was trying to do well. And if you can't win, cheat, hack into them. All right. Top of the right column. And we learn about, you know, how this may have helped him, right?
Yeah, all this actually really helped him. Basically, here it says that Davidoff was able to look above, below, around, sideways, and down into these programs, which basically you can say from the time he was playing the little DOS games as a kid to the time he was hacking into the video games, it was actually really good practice for him.
Right. Yeah, it gave him a chance to experiment. He had to learn his way around the computers. And
exactly.
He had to learn all the little nooks and crannies of computers. And now all that tinkering actually has become valuable. So, and it's put him in a position to where he can be a professional in this very lucrative field. Again, very pressure-packed, high-stress field. Now, for both of these guys, for both Davidoff and Cecchetti, this was a conscious and simple decision to become a white hat. Now, first off, what do we mean conscious decision?
I would say it's a good-hearted.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that what's right and wrong.
Yeah. Okay. It's something that you think about. You might think about it deeply. You meditate on it and just you have to make this decision as far as what is the right thing to do. So it's a conscious decision. And in fact, Adam Cecchetti does continue actually by saying in our last paragraph.
Cecchetti says, I'm not in this business to harm people or to take grandma's savings or deface somebody's website. So basically, you can see his good heart. Cecchetti is not in this to get something out of people. He really does want to make the world a slightly better place.
And when we were off the air, David, you had mentioned there's a thin line between the white hats and the black hats, right?
Yes, definitely. They all have the same, pretty much the same skill.
Right.
It's just a matter of heart.
It's a choice.
Yeah, it's a choice.
You're conscious. Your conscience as far as, you know, what am I going to do? Am I going to do the right thing? Am I going to try and help people? Or am I just going to try and do whatever I can to harm people or get money or things like that? So, and that's what Adam Cecchetti said. He is not in this business to harm people. He can do well enough. He can make enough money doing this, doing the right thing. And best of all, he can probably be at peace with himself for making the right decision. So he's not looking to harm people. He's looking to help people. Very interesting article. Listeners, thanks for joining us for this, our last article of the month. Don't worry. November is right around the corner, and that means a whole new Advance magazine. Thanks for being here today and this month. And also, thanks to the panelists. So we'll see you next time. Till then, this is Bill.
This is Rebecca.
This is David.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye.